So here's a truly shocking number, $660 billion. According to some healthcare experts, that's how much we spend in this country every year on unnecessary medical procedures and tests, unproven and futile treatments, and ineffective drugs. $660 billion. That's about a third of our total annual healthcare costs. So that's a number to keep in mind as we consider the rising cost of healthcare and how to target wasteful spending. A fundamental theory behind this effort is that more healthcare doesn't necessarily mean better healthcare, especially when it comes to expensive tests and procedures. Yesterday, a group of doctors got very specific. The American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation listed 45 different tests and procedures that they say doctors should perform less often. For instance, they recommend against ordering MRIs routinely for back pain. They also say EKGs shouldn't be part of routine physicals for all patients. And they advise against performing cancer screenings on dialysis patients with limited life expectancy. Does that sound like common sense or healthcare rationing? Well, we're going to talk about all of that right now. And joining us is Dr. Christine Castle, President and CEO of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation. And Dr. Castle, thanks so much for joining us. We're very grateful.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Also joining us in the studio is Dr. Vikas Sahni. He's president of the Lawn Foundation and a member of the Lawn Cardiovascular Group. Dr. Sahni is the organizer of a conference in Cambridge this month on treatment and avoidable care. And Dr. Sahni, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you. Dr. Castle, let me start with you. I mentioned just a few tests and procedures right there at the top. Tell us why you singled out these 45 particular tests and procedures. What made the list? In other words, what were the criteria that made the list?
We actually partnered with 9 specialty societies who are the leaders in these particular specialties: asthma and immunology, cardiology, internal medicine, family medicine, radiology, gastroenterology, et cetera. And they came up with the 5 things that their experts in their specialty felt in were the most susceptible to overuse. These aren't things that are never to be ordered or never to be used, but things where they're just very widely used when they really don't contribute to the care of the patient or for helping any of the patient's condition.
Well, I mentioned a couple of examples. Can you give me 2 or 3 more examples of the kind of tests and procedures that
Sure.
should be questioned by doctors and patients?
So there were 9 times 5, that gives us 45 different things, and your listeners can go online to www.choosingwisely.com and get the full list and all the background. But some examples are things like routine EKGs and routine chest x-rays before minor surgery, for example. Another example is CT scans of the head for an uncomplicated headache or a simple uncomplicated fainting spell that someone might have. So a lot of these are imaging tests that people have come to associate with, well, at least I can be sure it's nothing serious happening then. These are really have been shown to not be productive and not be helpful. Sometimes they're very expensive, and in the case of CT scans, actually have exposure to radiation.
Mm. Dr. Sahni, you and the Lawn Foundation have targeted overtreatment for a while, right? These 45 tests, are these just the low-hanging fruit? Could we go farther? What's your reaction to this list?
I think it's a great beginning, and I want to commend the American Board of Internal Medicine and the leadership of those 9 specialty societies for taking that lead. Unfortunately, in the past, it's an area where organized medicine has often been too silent. I do think there is those are the low-hanging fruit. Those are really the consensus areas. But there are others, and over time, as more discussion occurs and as people get more data and more outcomes, there's no question there will be many more practices that will be found to be not adding value, either in terms of quality of life, longevity, or in any other way. So it truly represents unnecessary wasteful spending.
Listeners, we're talking about reining in overtreatment and avoidable care. When a doctor orders a test or a procedure, do you ever question whether it's medically necessary? Would you? And doctors, do you find yourselves giving treatments just because it's better to be on the safe side? Do you worry that targeting specific tests and procedures is just a step down the road of limiting access to treatment? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Dr. Castle, let me ask you this. Back in 2009, as you know, a panel of experts recommended reducing the frequency of mammograms as well as raising the age at which women should start receiving them. The recommendations sparked all kinds of outrage and concern that the recommendations would lead to denied coverage. I'm just wondering if you can sort of disabuse us of the notion that this will happen as a result of these recommendations, that there'll be an outcry of, you know, that needed coverage is going to be limited.
I hope so. And let me tell you why. Because, first of all, these recommendations are based on scientific evidence, which screening guidelines are as well. One of the reasons there was so much controversy about those guidelines is that the general public doesn't understand largely the difference between screening tests and tests that the doctor orders when they think it's indicated for you because you have a high risk. And so what we've done here is to not to say this should never be done, but to say the doctor and the patient together ought to have a conversation about, do I really need this? We have heard from doctors, 30%, in some studies, up to 30% of physicians say that they have actually ordered something they know is not going to be helpful because the patient comes in asking for it. And, of course, patients are barraged by advertisements for drugs and tests and other kinds of things. They go online. What's really powerful about this campaign is that we have 11 consumer organizations partnering with us, and at the lead, Consumer Reports, who will be translating this information into terms that are user-friendly, that consumers and patients can understand. And then the idea is the patient goes to the doctor and asks the question. It isn't that you 100% should have it or not have it. It's that, by and large, these things are not necessary, and let's have a conversation with your doctor about it.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Saini, let me turn to you now. We mentioned that extraordinary number at the top of the segment, $660 billion, something like that, unnecessary tests, unproven drugs, all kinds of things that drive up the cost. What's the major driver here, in your view? Is it, for example, doctors' fears of malpractice litigation, patients' desire to be overly cautious? I mean, what's the sort of best way to describe the problem?
I think the best way to describe the problem is really that it's a culture, and it's a culture that's developed over several decades. And I think that while patients may drive some of it, let's be clear, doctors and physician culture has also driven a lot of it, if not most of it. I think the third-party payment mechanism, where somebody else was paying and was not really in the room, was a part of the culture. Mm. There's another part of the culture that is about a sort of worship of technology. And while, you know, my iPad may be magical, healthcare is not like that. And there is, however, a cultural view that it ought to be. And that, you know, there are many different things that should be miraculous, and they are on TV, and why can't they be in real life? And I dare say some of that is on the physician side as well, in terms of thinking about these things.
Well, speaking of it being on the physician side as well, you hear about doctors who own their own MRI machines, doctors who receive generous speaking fees from pharmaceutical companies. Isn't that part of the challenge as well? Dr. Castle, let me come to you for that.
That's a big part of the challenge, and Dr. Saini points to the fee-for-service system, in which what we pay for in healthcare has been volume, not value, and there are getting to be more and more ways in which both private insurance as well as other government insurance has tried to pay more for quality of care rather than just volume of things that are ordered. And I think we're getting better at that. But physicians also, as part of their business model, often have had conflicts of interest as they refer to particularly imaging centers and things like that. There's been studies showing that even though many physicians believe that it's not a conflict of interest, that just subconsciously they are more likely to order things if they have some financial interest in it. So that's another reason why I think that informed doctors and informed patients who are dealing with exactly the same scientific information are going to be able to make better decisions.
Dr. Kessel, stand by. I do want to get some callers into this conversation. We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. We're talking about reining in over-treatment and avoidable care and recommendations out this week to limit certain medical procedures and tests. And let's take a call from Framingham. Dr. Leitner in Framingham, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good to have you.
A little background. I'm a retired physician, board internist in internal medicine and medical oncology. A couple of the main issues. I've lost many patients, maybe 20 over the years, because they want unnecessary tests. And I'm one of the few doctors that I know, especially in Framingham, that's willing to risk the loss of a patient who wants an unnecessary CAT scan after simple back pain. I remember talking to some of my surgical colleagues about the wasteful bone scan screening. A lady has early breast cancer. They want to screen. The reason they use is, well, we need something to compare later, even though evidence-based medicine going back 20 years showed it had no effect. I refused to let hospitalists take care of my patients before I retired. Hospitalists don't know the patients as well, so that's a big wave against this concern about trying to explain to patients. They just don't know the...
Doctor, let me just jump in because we do have a bunch of other calls. I don't want to cut you off. I just like to, if I could just ask you this, do you think what you're hearing in terms of the recommendations that came out this week are a good idea based on your experience?
A lot of defensive medicine.
A lot of defensive medicine, you said?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Even though they claim that in Texas, where we have a pretty good tort reform, one of the great surgeons at the Brigham did this analysis where a business manager came in and showed the doctors how to increase their income by ordering test after test and consultant after consultant. But I still believe that until you'll make it easier for doctors not to worry about getting sued, a lot of this is going to be pie in the sky.
All right, doctor. We appreciate your call. Dr. Sani, do you want to comment on that?
I do. You asked what drives this, and we've heard a number of factors, including what is implicitly discussed as a conflict of interest on the part of physicians, hospitals, others in the healthcare system, or as various people have put it, you know, one person's savings is somebody else's lost revenue. But one of the drivers is really fear. Hmm. And I would suggest a key antidote is a really good, solid, trusting relationship between a doctor and a patient. If we're ships in the night and we're just meeting briefly, it's very easy for the patient's anxieties to lead to questions. And it's also equally easy for physicians' anxieties. And I would say it's not just about litigation. In fact, I would say litigation may be not in the forefront of people's minds, but the fear of a bad outcome. And the antidote to that is really a good long-term relationship. If we do that first, the costs will follow. Putting costs first inevitably leads to a discussion of conflicts and rationing in a way that I don't think is healthy.
Mm. Dr. Kessel, I want to put a little sort of pushback in front of you. I'm reading a quote from the New York Times from Catherine Nix, who's a healthcare policy analyst for the Heritage Foundation. Any information that can help inform medical decisions is good. The concern is when the information starts to be used not just to inform decisions, but to payers to limit decisions that a patient can make. With healthcare reform, changes in Medicare, and the advent of accountable care organizations, there has been a strong push for using this information to limit patients' ability to make decisions themselves. You want to address that fear and that concern about a group of recommendations like you're proposing?
Indeed, I do. And actually, Vikas has exactly the right answer to this, which is the trusting relationship between the doctor and the patient. But first of all, I want to correct the statement that the approach to patient-centered medical homes and accountable care organizations that are the innovative programs in the Health Care Reform Act are limiting patients' choice. It's quite the contrary, actually. They are enhancing patients' choices by creating more flexible environments and giving the patient more information about their whole healthcare system and having the patient have an navigator or an advocate who can help coordinate care in a very complex environment. So that statement is actually misleading. But I do agree with the concern that you don't want the insurance industry to be setting hard and fast limits about not paying for any of these things, particularly on this initial list of 45 that we put out there yesterday that on behalf of these nine societies. In fact, in every single one of these cases, it's about the conversation between the doctor and the patient, and sometimes it will be indicated. The other thing, let me just say, for something like, let's say, MRI and low back pain, the whole idea is you should not have that as your first line of defense. You need to do physical therapy. You need to see if it works. And then if you have that trusting relationship with your doctor, at some later time, 95% of the people will get better. And if you don't, that's when you go on to more aggressive testing. And that's where the good relationship and the coordinated care come in.
Well, Christine Cassel, I want to thank you for coming on Radio Boston today. That's Christine Cassel. She's president and CEO of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation. They came out this week with a set of recommendations to limit all kinds of tests and procedures in an effort to save costs. Also with us, Dr. Vikas Sani, president of the Lown Foundation and member of the Lown Cardiovascular Group. Thank you for coming in very much as well.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Up next, coming up later in the show, Andrew Bacevich and the end of the American century. Up next, electronic music and more ideas for your weekend. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.